Joe Earth and I are starting a podcast. What should we call it?
Hey, don't pick on me. You know why? Because this is why. Let's see what he says.
The Joe Show?
Give Joe the business?
That's right.
Cup of Joe.
Cup of Joe.
What is happening here?
Would you listen?
We'll give you a chance.
Thank you.
That's Joe.
That's Rooster.
And this is the Together We Shall podcast, episode 44 in 2024. What's happening, Hugs and High Fives, hat wearing man?
Yeah, man. I'm sporting my new garb that I got a couple weeks ago down there in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I don't know if they say it like that, but it did.
Yeah, kind of I don't know. It felt right to me. I don't know.
What's going on, man? I tell you, it's been a good kickoff to the month. A lot of things happening. You get Arctic breezes, and now it's like so hot outside. I had to like, you know, get 70 degrees on the East Coast already. Crazy
again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Totally wearing shorts right now. Wildness. But, you know, I'm sure just wait a while. I'm sure that'll change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead. I had something, but go ahead.
I just don't understand like weather. People always talk about, like, if you could do it again, like, the joke of being, like, a meteorologist, because, like, you're getting paid whether you're, like, right or wrong. Like, man, like, listen, or, you know, just asking Alexa, can't say it, obviously, right? Like, what's the weather? And it's like, man, like, it doesn't matter, like, if it is or isn't, but it's just, like, the trends, and we need to bring Briley back on at some point to talk about that, and, like, Arctic ice melting, and I just don't understand it, like many things in life, but weather really confuses me.
Did you just now go into this tangent about the weather because we were talking about the weather, or have you been pondering this thing?
Well, I've been pondering it, not like deeply, but like recently with this shift of whatever last like what 96 hours. I mean, like, I had to turn the chiller back on for my ice bucket, which is weird. I mean, I had 32 degree water without any effort 48 hours ago, and today I had 46 degree water. It's like, well, that's a huge swing. But then Owen this morning, like, getting dressed, like, he went and grabbed this big jacket. I'm like, nah, bro, you don't need that today. And he was like, why? I'm like, because it's warm. And he's like, why? And I'm like, exactly. I don't know why. Someone has to know. But they don't tell us why. They just say global warming and emissions and fossil fuels. But I don't know. Maybe I've missed that podcast on actually why, but I don't know why. And that's my weather rant for the day.
Yeah. Are you good? Are you going to be all right, Shaq?
I just want to know why. I don't know why.
Sometimes you have to... sometimes you have to let the why continue to be one of life's mysteries so that you can continue to move forward on stuff that maybe actually matters. But, you know, you'll be okay. It's going to be okay.
But see, matter impacts the weather, see?
Stop. Dude, okay. All right. I think we could keep. I was going to ask you what you thought of, you know, the Kelsey thing up there and, you know, the big burly man, you know, jumping down.
The whole like conversation that apparently he had with like Kylie before that, her being like, yeah, we're going to meet Taylor for the first time, be on your best behavior. And then like seconds later, he's just a gorilla in like, you know, in his natural element, you know, just jumping around, drinking beer, and he picking up little girls to meet Taylor. And it's like, you can tell like in some of the videos, the security guards are like, we're not allowed to let people do this, but it's Jason Kelsey. So like one, he'll eat all of us, and two, just let it go. And he just comes out and just pops back in like he jumped back in that thing like Mario, just bloop, bloop.
Yeah, dude, he did not. And just for everybody who's completely lost, Taylor Swift has a boyfriend and he plays football. And the football player's brother plays for the Eagles. But he was at the game and he cheered on his brother when his brother got a touchdown. But I want to talk about, you said he just kind of popped back in there like a Mario Brothers. Dude, he did a box jump. He's 300 pounds and he literally jumped back into the booth. It had to be 3 feet. Like, no miss. He is a freaking beast of an athlete. He's not young anymore either.
No, yeah. He's like, what are they, 36, 30? Like, I mean, somewhat my age. But yeah, that was, I mean, yeah, ice, I mean, what was it? Zero, the temperature, yeah. Zero.
Yeah.
Just
bloop, bloop. Yeah. Anyway, I had a feeling we've exchanged a couple of videos back and forth about all that, but yeah, it was neat. And you know, it could have went either way. The media could have attacked it. Like, you know, who is this big, you know, ape of a looking man making a scene and picking up little girls to say Taylor, like that. Everybody spun it in a positive way, but
I think because they've gotten used to it now. Like, cause originally when Taylor went to like her first game, or first couple games, it was like Taylor. And they're like, all right, we're over the, like, we're not over it naturally, but it's like, just focus on the game. They could have went to this, like, well, now it's Jason's turn to like the spotlight, let alone Travis, who had what, 3 touchdowns in that game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's,
yeah.
And now they're all, this morning they were talking about the night of the Super Bowl. She's in Japan, or she's in somewhere crazy. And they're like, if it ends and she goes back in time, but then goes forward in time again.
No. She's going to be performing in Paris, and Paris is 14 to 16 hours ahead. And so if she performs, then hops on a jet, she could fly back to Las Vegas. Given the international dateline and the time change, she could make it to the game. And
but she would, she will have 2 Sunday nights. She would have already had Sunday night.
She will. I'll never forget when I returned from Japan in 1996 and my parents, it was my parents. Lori was there. They picked me up from the airport and I had tomorrow's newspaper. They were blown away because I was like, here's tomorrow's newspaper. And they're like, wow. Yeah. But, you know, international dateline. Okay. Look,
So you returned from Japan to Louisiana?
Yes. Well, to Houston.
Cool.
But
Louisiana's cool.
Louisiana is cool. I see what you did there.
I tried, and it, like, it was a little bit of a curve. It didn't work.
Usually I pick up on things a little faster than that. So without further ado, we got some guests for episode 44. They're from Louisiana, but we'll let them tell you all that stuff. Myra Blaze, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
We usually ask everybody to share with the audience, like, who are you? Where are you physically located, and why do you think you're on the Together We Shall podcast? So I'll let each of you individually answer that. Go ahead.
I'm Blaze. I'm originally from New Orleans, live in Rain, married to Myra.
And I'm Myra, and I'm raised in Rain, and we're still in Rain, back on the same land that I was pretty much when I was born. And I guess y'all asked us because we've been part of the Ainsley's Angels group probably about 6 years now, I guess. Okay. And we've had a blast, and we see y'all at a lot of the events.
That's perfect. I love it. Well, that, you nailed it. And for all of our listeners, New Orleans, of course, is in Louisiana. It's not a state. It's a city in Louisiana. You do have to go through Louisiana to get to Baton Rouge. But anyway, I digress. It's a funny thing that Joe and I will move along now. But Rain is not 4 letters. It's 5 letters. It's got a Y, and it is a city in Louisiana. Now, whereabouts in Louisiana is Rain, Myra?
We're about 20 miles west of Lafayette, Louisiana, and we're best known because we're the frog capital of the world.
Joe, frog capital of the world.
I looked up where Rain was a little while ago, and I did not expect to hear of the frog capital of, like, the world. Not Louisiana, not the United States, not North America, not the Western Hemisphere, the world. That's
no. Yeah,
back in the day, it was a big frog trading city. I guess because the railroad came through here or something is the stories I'm hearing. And we're also, for a while, we were the mural capital. I don't know if the world or America, but if you drive around our little city, they have frog statues and frog murals painted on most of the buildings in town.
Now, how far is Rain from Interstate 10, which runs east and west from San Diego to Jacksonville, Florida? Yeah. How far is Rain from 10?
False. sir, it does not run from San Diego to Jacksonville, North Carolina. Barstow to Wilmington. Barstow, California to Wilmington, North Carolina. Oh, that's the 40. Rewind everything.
Okay, so getting back to where it is, I-10 comes through Rain. It bisects the town on the north end.
So if you're on Interstate 10, you drive through Rain.
Yes.
Do you have to go through Rain to get to Baton Rouge?
Oh, yes. If you're coming from Lake Charles or points west.
Okay. Yes. But you don't have to go through Baton Rouge to get to Rain.
Only if you're coming from the other way.
Anyway, so I did not know. Mural capital as well as the frog capital. And how many stoplights-ish are in Rain?
Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I believe 6.
Probably.
Joe's like,
I got the image maps up, and I'm like, there's not a lot. There's only 7,000 people.
Yeah.
That's about right.
How many frogs?
More than 7,000.
Yeah. Oh, no, they've wiped all the frogs out now.
Oh, they gone.
They're gone.
That's not quite true. Oh man, that's good. Well, y'all have been with Ainsley's Angels for a good 5, 6, 7 years now, and some people might remember you, Myra, from the documentary that was filmed in connection with our Ainsley's Angels race series and the On Running. They sent a production crew to you to tell a story. Like how was that, Madame Movie Star?
That was awesome. It was like being a movie star for a couple of days, and they were great people to work with, and they did a beautiful job, I thought, with the production, so we thoroughly enjoyed doing it.
In fact, one of our podcast guests was the director, Andrew Reed. We brought him onto the podcast to talk about the experience and his experience at growing up as an immigrant from Jamaica and eventually becoming an American citizen and living with disability, frankly. Great story from Andrew, his journey. We loved his story so much. We were like, well, you want to come on the Ainsley's Angels board of directors? So he's one of the board of directors for Ainsley's Angels.
Oh, is he now? Okay.
He certainly is. So really neat. How things can just happen, connections and breakpoints. So I want to come back to like some of your Ainsley's Angels experiences, specifically like deep diving into some of the things you said in the video. But let's go back. Let's go chronologically backwards. Myra said you grew up there in Rain, and now you're here in Rain, living on the same land as the family had for years. Blaze mentioned being from New Orleans. Can Blaze you take us back to maybe young Blaze before Myra, and then maybe tell your version of how you met Myra, and then we'll do the same thing for Myra there.
Well, speaking of young Blaze, I want to be the first to wish you both a happy birthday. I know that's coming up soon. So I wanted to be the first.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
So when is your birthday? Is it the same day or something?
What's going on? She's a week and a year older than me.
Yeah.
February 7th, February 14th for mine.
Awesome. It's a Valentine's baby.
Yeah. How about that? Okay. Yeah. So we're going to release this here next Tuesday, which is like the last Tuesday of January. And then you all will have this podcast to share with the world as you celebrate your birthdays in February. So, all right. Young Blaze, which is not the current Blaze, because Blaze isn't currently young.
How young? But when I met Myra?
Just to the point of relevance, like you're in New Orleans, like what's relevant about your New Orleans formative years? And then take us to when you met Myra. So just kind of set it up a little bit.
Well, my dad worked on the racetrack. My dad was an ex-jockey, horse racing official, and Lafayette had a thoroughbred racetrack that had started in the early 70s here. Primarily at that time, Lafayette was a heavy Cajun French-speaking area. But they didn't have a lot of horse people that were from bigger tracks. My dad moved up from New Orleans because he worked at the fairgrounds there, which was another big, old established racetrack. And I would come up in the summertime with my dad and stay with him in the summer. My mom still lived in New Orleans. Well, when time got on later in life, my mom moved up to Lafayette to be with my dad. And I happened to have a job and go to school as 1977, I would say. And I got a job at an auto parts store to supplement money. And Myra worked at one of the other branches of it. And I started to see her. And immediately I was attracted to her. And her sister, I think, and my boss at the time, Easton Trahan, said, well, y'all go out and have a good time. And it didn't work out at first, mainly because she had never been with somebody that was, let's say, a hippie. somebody unconstricted.
Wow, and dude, this is great.
I didn't have rules, and I was breaking all the rules, and she came from a very tight-knit Catholic doctrine family, and it was very hard for them to accept me. I had long hair, and I smoked. I did everything bad that a person could do that wasn't in their thing for what their little daughter, that the dad's favorite daughter, let me put it like that.
Okay.
I just didn't fit in at first.
Dude.
But we stayed dating, and it started to work for us, I guess.
All right. Well, you stop now, Blaze, because I want to get Myra's side of this whole story before we go any further. But Joe, bro, God, you want to talk about an opportunity to tangent? I did not know that Blaze was a hippie.
Well, I didn't know a lot of things. I mean, the racetracks and all that. But I'm also now wondering, like, all right, so he obviously got the girl. Did he get the girl by shaving his hair? Because clearly that's gone.
Well, we'll come back to that, I bet you, right now. So Myra, go ahead. So as much as I want to hear about all growing up in rain, let's skip that for a second. Tell us about when you first saw Blaze and your version of that story.
Yeah. So I was in my last semester at college, and they had an opening at the auto parts store that my sister worked at. So I took a part-time job there. And like Blaze said, we were at kind of across town from each other. But he would run the parts from his store to our store and vice versa. So he would come in and he'd wave and, you know, whatever. And the boss lady there said, I think he likes you. I think he wants to ask you out. And I said, oh, never. That was my first reaction. And about a week later, they tell me that I have to start going to his store once a week to do the inventory for them. And I think that was a setup by the bosses, maybe. So I started going over there and, you know, found out he was a pretty nice guy. He was funny, you know, and he kept asking me out. And so being in an overabundance of caution in the bubble I was raised in, you know, I said, okay, we'll go on a double date. So we got my cousin and her fiance to come on a double date with us. And we had a really nice time. And then he didn't ask me out for like 2 months after that. And I'm like, geez, you know, he tried so hard to get me to go on a date. We go on a date and then nothing, you know.
Blaze, what say you, bro? What's up with that? Then nothing.
Poverty. Boyfriends cost money.
To all our young listeners, do you hear that, friends?
She came from an established family, and I had a car's cassette deck hooked up to a battery in my front room was my sound system.
And what was playing?
I had no money.
And what was playing on that sound system? What was your go-to cassette in mid-1970s there?
Bad Company.
Bad Company. I'm not even going to try to sing it. But Blaze, bro, mind is blown. I love this. I might even have, like, flipped the roles. Like, Myra was a hippie, and Blaze was a conservative Christian upbringing, Catholic, altar boy. Yeah, no, wow. Okay, so back to Joe's question. Was it the hair, Myra? Did the hair attract you?
No, or was it like... did not. He didn't cut it. He did not cut it, I don't think. Well, he cut it a little bit, but for our wedding was when he really cut it. Like, I was shocked because he cut it all off for the wedding, you know.
So,
when did you get married?
We got married in 1980.
2 years after we met, I would say.
Yeah.
Right at about 2 years.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, you got to remember the other things that were going on at the time, at that point. You had the gas shortages going on. So going from Lafayette and being making very little money, what I did, all the way out to Rain to take her out. Financially, there was that. Every guy had a perm at that time. I did not look. I was trying to wear my perm out. It looked terrible. But they had those things going on. I can't drive 55. I mean, all of those things in America was going on at that time. And I drove a Volkswagen.
Yeah.
I drove a Volkswagen. And her parents didn't feel it was a very safe car for their handicapped daughter that had never been released into the wild. You know, like, they put her into this immense Chevrolet Caprice, worried that with her brittle bone disease that, you know, it would absorb the impact should she get into a wreck. And here I am in a Volkswagen. That they didn't like import cars. It's small. If you get in a wreck because you're not the good type, our daughter's going to get killed.
Wow. Dude, this is
things that went on in our relationship that I had to struggle through.
Yeah.
No, dude, like, this is freaking fascinating. We're going to keep going here. All right. So, Myra, Blaze mentioned the handicapped daughter, the brittle bone piece. Like, can you give us some background on that? And then we're going to use that to get us all back up to 1980, and then we're going to proceed into past 1980. So give us some background there.
So I was born, I have a twin brother, and I'm one of six kids. And I was born, it was just a spontaneous genetic mutation. And I was born with a condition called osteogenesis imperfecta, or they call it OI, or brittle bone disease. And it's very rare. And actually, I have two other siblings who were diagnosed with it. And two of our children were diagnosed with it. And but by far, mine was much more severe than any of the others. But we had no family history up until that time of the disease. So I was kind of started breaking bones when I was 1 year old, and up until about 12 years old, I probably had 30 plus fractures during that time frame. And then, I don't know, by the grace of God, when I turned 12 and puberty kicked in, sometimes your bones will grow a lining, I was told, and strengthen. And I, knock on wood, I have not had a fracture since then. It could, you know, as you age with osteoporosis and whatnot, you know, the likelihood of it occurring again will be very high.
Well, thanks for sharing all that. Joe's got a question, and then I got 27 questions. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I didn't know about two of your children having it. How old are they now?
With them, their cases were really mild. So our oldest son probably had the more severe, and he probably had, I don't know, 15 to 20 fractures, you know, if you count fingers and things like that. And our daughter only had about three fractures. And then as she got older, and she actually just had a child, she did actual genetic testing. And even though we were told she had it, they're not so sure that she actually had it. So, and I've never been genetically tested. So,
and you all have how many kids?
Four. Yeah.
How was that? What do you call it? Child bearing, like, for the obvious, it did, nothing broke, right? But like, a concern?
Yeah, it was a very big concern. In fact, when I got pregnant for Josh, my doctor, who was a high-risk doctor, dropped me because he didn't want to deal with it.
I don't know why I pictured physically like drop to you, like I don't know why, but like get up on the table and boom.
But I luckily hooked up with a very good local doctor who took great concern in my case and studied it and successfully delivered my four kids by C-section. That was the only kind of prevention we took, and that was by my choice, both for me and for them. So, and they all grew up healthy, and we have three nurses and an insurance agent in the group, and they're I think a good bunch of kids. So
yeah, for sure.
And now we have grandkids, and we have one on another one on the way. So we're real happy with that. And our grandson, our youngest grandson, was born last year, and he has Down syndrome. And so we're hopeful that he'll be a future Ainsley's Angels rider in the next few years.
Heck yeah. Maybe even eventually pushing you at some point.
You
know what I mean? Well, I mean, there's this. Well, we've seen this before, where riders and those that have Down syndrome going through the process of becoming riders and gaining that appreciation, that acceptance, that belonging at race day, getting to a point at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, where they're like, I'm good with being pushed. I'm physically able to run. I want to run. I mean, I call it a premonition, but Myra, you better get ready.
We don't need to talk about ages unless we want to, but you have a milestone coming up, not in what is it, 4 years, but the one after that, that so 14 years, that individual would be 14. So there could be some milestones there for a 5K for sure.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I have no idea.
I had to do the math on age, and I didn't want to put it out there. But
I could tell you were doing math in public though in your head, but you didn't want to say numbers anyway.
Well, speaking of numbers, I probably say we've got to be the oldest combined age team that Ainsley's probably has ever had.
Yeah.
I mean, the only ones giving them a run might be Team 2-for-1, but I don't know those ladies' ages, nor will I ever ask. They were previous podcast guests. They have children that are akin to your – Joe, don't go looking up Team 2-for-1's
ages. I gotta know, man. I'm not gonna say
it. Like this, in less than a month, we'll top out 131 years of age.
You said it. Because earlier I was like, man, I think – these are our oldest podcast guests. And I was like, oh, yeah, definitely. But I'm not going to say it, but I got to know.
Can we just cut to the chase here, please? How old are you going to be?
Oh, yeah, you got him by 10 years, man.
I will be 65. I am already receiving all of the Medicare mail every day. I've got somebody wants to my business.
Yeah. Got it. Of course, by
66. So
there you go. Okay.
It's we're not. I don't hide our age. It is what it is. You know.
I think Joe's making a push towards 80. So 80. I think that's where. Yeah. So when y'all are 80, your grandson can push you. Yeah. Okay. Cop shit. By that point, Blaze. I mean, I don't. You know, maybe you got two grandsons. One pushing Myra. One pushing Blaze.
I don't see any of that. I don't look past the 2 years. That's my outlook on life. I just want another two good years every 2 years.
You know? I love that, brother. I love that. That's quotable.
You know, if you dream too far in ahead, you lose what's right in front of you. I find that.
Yeah.
I love that. Quotable. Yeah. Well done. Love it.
I shared something on Facebook earlier. Very similar. That was like everyone starts off, you know, January with these big goals, and I'm going to be a astrophysicist or something. It's like just focus on this year and break it down by the year, and then you have the four seasons, and in those four seasons are the 3 months, and those months a week, and just take it step by step by step. The movie What About Bob, right? Bill Murray, baby steps.
Yeah.
Those baby steps are eventually going to lead to big steps, and you'll get there. Yeah.
Mm, I like solid it. Stuff. Before we get too far into the future, can we go back one more time? I do want to give some airtime to Myra, you helping us kind of elaborate a little bit more on what Blaze alluded to. You know, he said, you know, Myra, the daughter, the disabled daughter, she's in this cocoon. You even said a bubble, I think, Myra. did your bone disease create a physical disability? I know the answer, but some people
don't
know.
Yes, it did. Because most of my fractures were in my legs, and especially on my left leg. So it stunted the growth in my left leg, and I have like a 3-inch buildup on that foot. So I walk with crutches for, you know, when it's not, as I age, it's impacted me more. So I use the crutches not just for balance, but support. And then if I have longer distances, I have a scooter I get around in.
Now, how was life in the 60s in South Central Louisiana with a disability? Like, how were you treated? How were you not treated? Like, can you give us some context there? And maybe compare that to how it is today in the same area.
Yeah, I guess I was very blessed being born in a small town in a huge family, because I probably had like 50-something first cousins, you know, and our neighborhood was full of kids. So our house was kind of like the meeting grounds. So there was always people, you know, I never felt alone or really too different, because even though I spent a lot of time in the hospital, you know, back in the day, they would keep you in traction for weeks. So you'd be in the hospital rather than the way they treat fractures today. So, I attended the regular school, which was only like 3 blocks from where we live. And back in the day, they would send kids from school to run to my house to bring the test over to me. And I guess it was about in third grade, they developed an intercom system. So I could be, you know, at home in a hospital bed and listen to everything that was going in at class, you know, and because my brother was in my class too, they convinced all these kids that I was this little bitty person living in that box. And they would all come and bang on to get my attention, you would hit the top of the box and it would ring on my side. And they'd say, are you really in there? And I'm like, yeah, you know, and they would all, I just play along. You know, but other than the fractures, I had a really pretty good childhood.
Well, you mentioned being blessed into a big family in a small town. Like what I just heard you talk about is you were surrounded by allies. You were surrounded by people, who lifted you up, who helped you have accessibility, have education, have sense of belonging. And I think we preach that all the time on this podcast in Angels and Angels. Like those are the elements to be an ally and to do those things. So that's really, really awesome that you had that given what you were born with. So that's special. You said in your video that was produced, and I'm going to actually put the video at the end of this podcast, because while the video itself is awesome, it's the words, because I've listened to it and not watched it. I've gone through that exercise and there's some powerful sharing in there. But in the video, you say, I quote, growing up with a disability, I was always a spectator. It is one thing to spectate, but it takes you to a whole nother level when you're able to participate. I just got body chills reading that. Tell me what you think of when I read that to you just now.
Yeah. I mean, I just think about like the first race that we did with Ainsley's Angels and the many we've done since then, you know, and then now that we had kids and we supported them in their sporting activities and whatnot, you know, I never had that thrill or joy of people cheering me on, you know, like you get at the finish line at Ainsley's Angels, you know, it was like so foreign to me. You know, when I got to experience that, it was like, wow, I never knew I was missing out on something. But, you know, experiencing that, it really made me feel like, you know, more of a part of like a group activity, which I never had gotten to do before either, you know. So it's brought a whole new awareness to me, you know, the camaraderie between runners. I never knew about that, you know, and we did one of the half marathons, I guess, you know, with Ainsley's Angels. And, you know, when you're running and how people are like, okay, y'all doing a great job. Keep going, you know, don't give up. And all the encouragement you get along the way. I never even imagined that. I thought everybody was like out against each other, you know, like you watch team sports and you see, yo, you hate the other team and you pulling for your team, you know. But out there, it was just a whole different environment. I mean, you know, maybe the real elite athletes have a different view, but we're never up at the start. Too long again.
I've had a chance to meet quite a few elite athletes, and I will tell you that these folks are just as supportive of each other. It's a wonderful, wonderful community, and it's a great place for us to exercise what we do. Now, Blaze, you push Myra. In fact, you've pushed Myra in almost all of her races. I know that I can say that I had the honor of pushing Myra or being pulled by Myra in a 4th of July race, and you were like, bro, like, you're going to push my wife today. And, you know, it's almost like I was about to take your daughter out on a date. I was like, are you sure this is okay, Blaze? Like, can I? Anyway, you push her. Talk to me about how it feels when the both of you get out there on the course together. Because you were a runner before Myra joined the course. No? What's the story there?
You know, I'll tell you how it went. I became a runner maybe 2 months before we started getting involved with Ainsley's Angels. I was out of shape. I was a heavy smoker. I was not doing any activity other than work. I decided I was going to get healthy this year. It was sometime in September. I quit smoking, boom, and everything. And I started running just 100 yards at a time. I had no ox. I couldn't run. We happened to see at our fish camp in Hackberry, Louisiana, a flyer that said, park to park in Sulphur 10K. Well, we would go every weekend to the camp in Hackberry, and Sulphur was not that far away. And it was a small community also, so I didn't feel threatened about being terrible. So I went and got in the race, and when we showed up in the morning, the first thing we saw was the Ainsley's Angels trailer and people getting loaded up into the chariots to start this race. Now, we didn't talk to anybody during, but I asked Myra, I said, would you want to do that if they let you? And she said, yeah, I wouldn't mind giving it a try. So after the race, and it was just a 10K, took me, you know, a long time to finish it, but they were still there. And I remember going up to Christine and Tracy and asking them, this is my wife. Would she be allowed to do that? And how much does it cost? Because, you know, I ain't got that much money. And they said, no, she is fine. Yes, come do this. This is our next race. Let's meet your wife. And no, it doesn't cost anything. Just bring her, please. And that is our way we became associated with Ainsley's Angels, was through the Sulphur Park to Park. Just seeing the trailer there, and we were both like, wow, looking, because, you know, we see her physical condition, which has, I'll tell you how bad she was. Before I ever met her, she got out of a cast one day, her sister sat on the bed, but not on her, and the movement of the bed caused her to break again and go into a lower full body cast.
Wow.
She got out of a cast. Someone sat on the bed, it moved it too soon, back in a full body cast. So that's what her bone disease was like. So when I say that she was fine later on when we put her in the chariot, my biggest fear was, okay, the bumps, the bounces. She's never been on an amusement ride, really, because they're too violent for her. So I'm worried, okay, so when I'm running, pushing her, I'm looking for every bump to let her know to tighten up. You know, there's just so many things that would, for her disability, for others, it, you know, their bodies can absorb that bump. Now, for her, that was my biggest concern, was, is this going to hurt her bouncing? Because she's never had to endure the bounce of it. And I'll say the chariots are so well made and padded that has never even been an issue of ours. You know, my concern for her safety, just for her happiness, just get after it.
Wow, thanks for sharing all that, man. I did not know the depth. I never knew that story. That is, I love it. Joe, what do you got?
Well, it was great because, yeah, talking about the quitting smoking and all that, and I was like, I wonder, because I didn't know, you know, how you guys got connected, and I think it was like in 2018, right, with the organization. So it was great. You saved the question. And obviously it's worked out, and you guys have done half marathons together. I mean, how many races now do you think you guys have done?
I don't know. We do 10 every year with Ainsley's.
At least.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, the last episode we had Tracy on, and she mentioned that y'all were going to go do Houston with Heather. How was the Houston? Did y'all go the half marathon there? What y'all do?
Half marathon.
Tell us about that.
I'll tell you, she can't take, I'm too slow, so she can't take a full marathon with me pushing. So her next thing with being, she wants to try is a full marathon. We're going to go let her do Marine Corps with y'all.
Whoa, I missed this. Whoa, is this true?
Yeah.
Did I know this?
No, we had to make sure we had somebody stable to push her.
Wait. So, did y'all just declare just now on live air? Joe, did you know
pretty
this?
Much, yeah.
Joe, what? Dude, this is great. Myra's, is she coming this year? 2024, October.
2024.
Yeah. Joe, did you know that?
Did not.
Email Joe at ainsleysangels.org. Everybody who wants to see Myra at Marine Corps Marathon in October. Joe,
this is exciting. It happened so quick. Like, I pulled up my roster and I'm writing it down. Like, I don't want to forget. Like,
this is great.
Because then I'll see it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Houston half marathon. We had never encountered that many people. We're not good with crowds. I'm so worried she's going to get hit, knocked down. The things that I have to worry about as a caregiver, a little different from other ones. You know, I'm her shield in traffic. You know, I'm always pushing people like, hey, you can't back up on her, you know. But Houston, as far as Ainsley's Angel people over there, Heather and her group, unbelievable how well done 30,000 people in a race can just have 20 riders with chariots. And we're in people way when we're that slow. You know, don't get me wrong. They're having a run around us. These people, for having 30,000 people in a race, this was unbelievable how well managed these runners were to let us in there and run around with no conflicts whatsoever. All the support and, you know, accolades, like, you're doing a great job as they passed you up, you know. Just wonderful experience over there. It really was.
Yeah, it was massive. I've never run, you know, that was the biggest one we've ever done. And what really got me was how well organized it was. I mean, Heather and them really put together a great event for us. I mean, for the whole weekend, not just the day of the race, you know. And the whole race, you didn't go maybe 100 yards without people on the side of the road. I mean, people in Houston really come out and cheer and support this event. And that was amazing to me.
I feel really fortunate at this time frame of being involved with Ainsley's Angels. The ambassadorships that Louisiana has, I don't know about the other areas in the country. I can only say if they're run anything similar to Louisiana's ambassadors. I know Landis on a personal basis. He runs a great one. I know the people that's up in Shreveport and Monroe. If everybody has that kind of concern over all of the people that are riders and runners, Ainsley's just going to keep growing. It's going to, one good turn deserves another. All those things that you hear, the inclusion that people are allowed in this, it blows my mind that people can be that nice and not get anything out of it. You know, anybody can be nice and helpful and do that when they're getting a stipend, money, and paid. These people are giving up their own money, their own time. Tad, I reference Tad all the time. My God, you know, he's got so many other things he could be doing. You know, it's not like he has a child with a disability or something. He's doing it because of the love of it. That's the real heroes in this thing, not me pushing her. Those people that get the chariot ready for her. We had one instance where there was a need to reset the tire because it wasn't quite right. And they took the time when they had all these other things to do to set this tire correct for Myra. That's a worry I don't have to have, is that something's going to happen mechanically and injure my wife. They do this for us. And that's the beauty of this thing.
Yeah, it is really pretty and special and fabulous. And I have so many places I want to take all of those comments. But the one I think that's worth highlighting is you started in Southwest Louisiana. You got to do events down the road in Baton Rouge and Acadiana and New Orleans and up northern Louisiana. And then you had a chance to go to Houston and nothing changed. Like,
No.
And that's the beauty of what we have tried to scale.
Yes.
Is that if you start with the mission, if you're pure with your intentions, then it will translate. And as soon as it doesn't, you got two Marines named Rooster and Joe who will pick up on that pretty fast and lean into the team of leaders to find out, you know, did we make a mistake? Is this just not the right fit for this local leader to have this responsibility? Because if you're not helping others, if you're not giving without expectation, if you're not doing this with respect, if you're not bringing optimism and enthusiasm to race day morning, and all the while being accepting and loving and caring and bringing this environment to the fold, then it won't grow, Blaze, to your point. It won't grow. It will fall. It will implode. And so it is really awesome for Joe and I to hear the way that you just articulated that and singing the praises of our guardian angels like Tad and our ambassadors across Louisiana and into Texas. And you will see.
Yeah, we got to shout out Beth and Jen.
And Kim.
Yeah. Oh,
yep. That's a good group there, too. We've done a lot of races with them as well.
And I love that you did that because that's where I was going to go. I was going to say it's you have gotten to see Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas. But I can tell you, as you travel to our other 70 locations and hundreds of communities across the country, that same line that connects us all, humanity, love, inclusion, giving without expectation, it runs strong. And when you come to Washington, D.C. in October, you're going to meet a whole new crew of people. And you're gonna get to see it there too. So I'm overjoyed. I'm so excited for you all, Joe.
Like you said, the things we could talk about now. I mean, going to Houston, 30,000 runners, at that event. 10 years of, athletes, with special needs participating there is great. Now you're gonna come to Marine Corps, and what's really exciting to me is you're gonna come on the 49th year. And you're going to see 40 plus thousand people and over probably 150, athletes, right, to that starting line. And you're not going to go 100 feet without seeing people. And then you're going to cross that finish line, Myra. And Blaze is going to be so excited that it happened. You're going to go, I can't wait to come next year for the 50th. And I challenge you not to tell me that. When you get up to the tent and you're having a sandwich and we're all sitting down, Sunday afternoon, I've challenge you not to say, all right, we'll be back next year. And then again, you're going to get to meet all some of these ambassadors that you haven't met, and you're going to see that same love. And I'm really glad that we record these and that this is a podcast, because that 90 seconds to 2 minutes that you talk there, Blaze, is great. We're going to be able to share that with the ambassadors, not just in Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, but all over. I mean, there's some neat things that our marketing team's going to be able to do with that. So thank you for the pat on the back to all those folks out there, across the country doing that work. It means a lot to them, and it means a lot to us to hear you all say that. So the question that I really have, though, is who's pushing Myra?
We have Amber Geyser.
Yes!
Yeah.
How about that, Amber?
I went for the strongest female runner that I know personally. I said, Myra, I'm going to try and talk to Amber. So I got Amber on my side, and she said yes.
Joe, is Amber on your list?
She is on the list.
This is great.
I don't. That's a great fit. Amber's done the race a handful of times. Great human being. So yeah, I'm excited to see you all in whatever it is, a handful of months, a lot of months really. But I mean, that's great for like the listeners out there. Like, this is the pitch, right? There's still time. There's spots mm-hmm. for you if you're listening or watching this. We have them, runners, riders. If you want to come to DC, email Joe at ainsleysangels.org. I will say, Rooster, and you'll like this, that we're about 45% full on bibs already, and it's not even the end of January.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So you very excited.
Yes.
get with Joe.
Registered.
Get with Joe. He'll give you all the guidance. So that's exciting, man. Gosh, who knew this little nugget was going to present itself? I don't even really know where I even want to go. So let me think here. Where can we take this conversation now? Blaze, what do you want to tell us about? No, you know what? Myra, how about this? Myra, tell me about the first time that you crossed the finish line and felt like you were participating and not the spectator you alluded to. When you got back in the car and you and Blaze are driving back to Rain, what was the conversation?
It was how amazing the experience was and how the people were so giving and accepting, you know. It was, you know, and being a disabled person, you know, you could really easily feel sorry for yourself. But when you're in that kind of environment and you get to meet all these other people, I tell them, I'm like, I almost don't feel disabled, you know, because it was just unbelievable the disabilities that some of these people had. And they were out there and the joy on everybody's face, you know, the runners, the riders, and all the people associated with the Ainsley's Angels organization. You just felt the love of everybody. You know, you immediately felt accepted. And I mean, I cried when we crossed the finish line that first time because it was just so much joy, you know, to be able to experience that and do that.
What race was that?
The first one?
Mm-hmm. If we first saw him at Sulphur Park to Park, which is in March or February, into that, then the next thing Ainsley's did would have been one of the three races in Lake Charles, either the 3-miler at Athletes Corner, the 4-miler for 4th of July.
I can tell you this. You signed up April 18th, 2018. So we could probably go back to the race schedule.
Yeah.
Who signed the document?
Yeah.
Another one I signed away. Twice. I didn't even know.
Twice. Did you get it for Acadiana and Lake Charles?
Yeah.
Twice. There you go.
Because, yeah, we did. When the Acadiana group formed, we did sign up with them. And, you know, we've been lucky to be able to run with so many of the different groups. It's been a great experience with each and every one of them.
That's what we always say, you know, together we shall, and that it's one big family. So it can feel like different groups, but as you're getting a chance to go to Baton Rouge, Mississippi, and Houston, yeah. Lake Charles, like at the end, do you get that vibe, that feeling that it's all one big family?
Yes.
Oh, yes. So much.
Yeah. The only thing that we hope changes is really just the scenery, you know, the weather, right? But yeah, the ambiance.
Yeah, send us some good weather for this Saturday, please.
What y'all got coming up this Saturday? What's going
on? We're doing the Mardi Gras Mambo in Baton Rouge, and there's like, I think, a 75% chance of rain that morning.
and that's how you say it, Joe, Baton Rouge.
Yeah. Yeah, I was
well
being,
done.
Being,
the Cajun pronunciation.
So, what is this Mardi Gras thing? I mean, I know what it is. Joe thinks he knows what it is. Like, what is Mardi Gras? Tell the people that don't live in Louisiana how you would describe Mardi Gras and what it represents to you.
Mardi Gras is like a one continuous party from the Epiphany, I guess, in usually in January until Fat Tuesday, which is
for Lent in the Christian
world. And so there's parties, there's parades, and balls, and you name it, they are celebrating. And king cakes are real big now. And I don't know that that's a secret just down here now, because I think they ship them everywhere. And we're lucky to have our first king cake of the season last night, and it was delicious.
Yeah. So these are baked goods with a whole lot of sugar and icing and glaze on top. But what's inside of the king cake?
This one, they hide a baby, and whoever gets the piece with this little plastic baby has to buy the next king cake. But the place my son got it at last night, they're actually putting a diamond in one of the king cakes this year. And whoever gets that fake diamond will get a real diamond. So that's a new thing.
Now, you said you grew up in a Catholic family. Do you know the history behind why there's a baby in these king cakes and what the semblance of that is?
Yeah, I mean, the baby represents the Christ baby, you know, and even all the colors, you know, the greens and purples and everything is symbolic. If you read, I don't want to misquote it. So, but there's history, and it's a Catholic history behind everything related to Mardi Gras. And pretty much they were preparing for the beginning of Lent on Ash Wednesday. And so they would throw these big celebrations.
Yes.
And I think over the years, it's just grown and grown and grown. So, you know, our little town had its first official Mardi Gras parade last Saturday, in fact. So it continues to spread. That it used to be only the big towns, where Blaise was from. New Orleans, of course, is well known for Mardi Gras. And they probably have a parade almost every day during Lent, I think. And now the outlying little towns are getting involved, and they each have their own parades now.
It's been really cool for Ainsley's Angels to be involved in Mardi Gras season as well. I mean, for example, in Southwest Louisiana, they're in the children's parades. In fact, they're the Grand Marshal. Yeah, they're the Grand Marshal for the parade this year in Lake Charles. And over in New Orleans, Blaise, the New Orleans ambassadorship was invited to participate in the parade that's happening on 11 February. And I'm told it's the biggest of all the Mardi Gras parades. It starts in front of the Children's Hospital, and it rolls far and away. But that is pretty special, because there was a time during the celebration of Mardi Gras, dare I say, during the parades, that those with disabilities may not have been able to go to the parade. There was a time where people were put away, and God forbid the public sees them.
Yeah.
And now today, the Grand Marshal and invited to the biggest New Orleans parade are going to be our angels rolling. Like, that is what I'm talking about. It's beautiful. Yeah. And to be included in this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Belonging, celebration, inclusion. It's just so beautiful. But thank you for that tie to what Mardi Gras represents at its core and what it has become today. But I just can't get out of my head the fact that Blaise was a hippie. So
I'll have to find you a picture.
So we need a picture for our Instagram. So the Together We Shall podcast has an Instagram channel. And when we launch our episodes on Tuesdays.
I'll send you my high school. I still have it. My high school ID from New Orleans.
Yeah.
Before I moved up to Lafayette. And the hair just got longer.
Yeah. So we're going to look for like 5 to 6, 7 pictures, if y'all could go through and give us some, you know, young Myra in the box, you know, people are you in there? Are you in there?
Yeah.
to Blaise in high school. And then maybe when y'all dated, maybe when y'all got married, because then Blaise got a haircut. And then whatever else you want to share, 3 or 4 pictures, that'd be awesome. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, man, this has been fun, dude. This has exceeded any expectation or idea about how this conversation was going to go. This has just been a blast. And Joe, I'm not going to edit anything. There's nothing in this episode that I need to go back and edit. There's no ums and flows and pauses. This has been fun. Joe, is there anything that you want to say as we start to get onto the back half or the conclusion of today's show?
Man, I don't know. I don't want to wait for these pictures. So I'm like looking through Facebook. I'm like, there's gotta be a one on there, but yeah, I guess I'll wait for the picture. But I think one of the things I want to say is going back to what Myra said, right? And I mean, obviously the powerful words from the on video, but like she said, the, the feeling of inclusion. I mean, we've heard it going back, you know, at least for me, you know, when Rick said, you know, when I'm running, it feels like my disability disappears. And we've heard that over, you know, the whatever 15 years that I've been around, give or take, you know, within the organization, to where that's it. Like, and it doesn't have to be running. It's the parade. It's the dinner where, you know, the riders, if you would, right, or just the individuals, they're like, I don't have a disability here. We're all one. We're all the same. We're having fun. And that's just great to hear. The reminder that, you know, and like Blaze said, that like there's people out there doing great things and it makes everybody happy. And in the end, that's it. The smile is what it's all about. So thank you for reminding us, both of you.
Often when we're meeting the other riders from other areas, you know, for myself, I don't hear real well. And I struggle to understand what some people are saying just in a natural voice. But the effort that to get down on someone's level in their eye level in their chair and have a little conversation with some of these people, you know, I am humbled at that point. You know, I don't get too choked up, but when I am trying to communicate with somebody that struggles to communicate even, and they're telling me that I'm doing a great job. No, man, you're doing a great job. You know, they're telling me great job, and it's not about me, and it's about them. And then when you hug somebody, you don't even worry about, you know, you just, it's the love that's right there at that moment. And that's what the pictures never get to copy, is they don't see that one instant where somebody's eyes connected. And they say, you know, here's two people from very different worlds. And I can say, look at them and saying, you know, man, I love you. And it's true.
Yeah. And
wow. This Ainsley's has been one of the few things that I can ever associate in my life that there's a care and a love that just goes beyond how much you make, what you are, who you are. You know, it doesn't matter skin color, nationality, old age, young person, you know, it's just that there's a connection of somebody cares about somebody. That's all it is.
Cheers to that, Blaze. Cheers to that.
Yeah.
We're going to have to bring Blaze around on some speaking engagements.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
He's pretty good. He doesn't get enough credit, but he's pretty good. That's one of the things that attracted him to me was that after we did go out on a date, that one time he did write me this card, this beautiful poem, and stuck it in my card. And that's really what got my attention. So he's pretty good with words, you know.
Yeah. And if the person doesn't like it, he can't hear him anyway.
Some other tidbits, I know y'all don't know about Myra. So many people in her family never thought of her getting out of a wheelchair. See, she was in a wheelchair when I met her. They had never seen this girl walk. When she was getting married, she decided, I'm going to walk down the aisle. And this is a long Catholic church aisle because she had a big Catholic church wedding. And she held on to her dad with the built-up shoe. And that was the longest she had ever walked distance-wise in her life, was to come get married to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People were like crying. They'd never seen Myra out of a wheelchair, out of a cast, are now watching her walk down an aisle to get married.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Church was crying, that's for sure.
I thought we were going to get through an episode without me having some watery eyes and tears falling, dude, but you just did it with that. That is freaking powerful, dude. And like, to think how you were feeling seeing her overcome and persevere to get to the symbolism, the transition, dude, like, that is powerful. That is beautiful. Wow. Dude, yeah, we need a picture of her coming down that aisle too, man. That's wow.
And the picture of her dad when he shook my hand and he said, if you break my daughter's heart, I'll kill you.
Thank God. It was funny because I thought you were going to say, if you break one of my daughter's bones.
He had finally accepted me at that time that he couldn't get rid of me.
That's wild. That's awesome. This has been a really fun episode. Thanks for accepting the invitation. And
no,
I look forward to seeing y'all this July, Sunset 5K, and then in October at Marine Corps. This is going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking forward to another year of it. Yeah.
Myra, we're going to give the microphone to you. You want to take us home? What do you want to leave the listeners with?
I'm just going to encourage everybody to reach out to somebody you know who's disabled and tell them about this organization, because they're missing out on something that is so fun and will take you out of your shell. And I just challenge everybody to spread the word, and in doing so, you'll be spreading inclusion across everybody.
You know what? I got enough. Time.
He's in charge.
We're done. This was good.
Yeah, we're done here. The structure of this building has reached its capacity.
Find your people, and if they make you feel sexy, even better.
I found a picture of Blaze.
Okay.
Oh, no. Not the Boy Scout picture.
Nope. Just wait. Hold on. I'm going to share. Maybe I can share my screen.
Yeah.
That's what he looked like, but this was actually maybe 3 years ago. That was for
I didn't have that nice of clothes back then either.
Growing up with a disability, I was always a spectator. You know, it's one thing to be a spectator, but it takes you to a whole nother level to be able to participate. Just because I'm disabled doesn't mean I don't have the right to run. I can't tell you how many people stop me all the time and go, "You're a runner?" Ainsley's Angels is a beautiful organization that gives disabled individuals the opportunity to run like others.
We are called Angel Riders, and people behind us, they're lending us their legs so that we can do the race, and they're called our Angel Runners. Rider and runner, and together we shall get it done.
It doesn't matter what kind of disability you have, we spread joy and love to everybody.
It's just such a positive, supportive, loving atmosphere. It's something that's rarely found these days.
My wife Jessica and I, we do as many races as we can together.
We're very competitive.
The exhilaration I feel in the middle of a race in the sled is, it's a euphoria that I otherwise probably would have never experienced.
I go fast.
Sometimes I'll stay up all night just because I can't sleep, so I'm so excited.
The feel of just moving at such a fast pace.
It's sheer adrenaline.
And then as you get closer and closer to the finish line, and people are actually cheering you on, and there are signs and yelling, it's like nothing I ever got to experience in my life.
Being disabled, running, just means freedom. It just means acceptance, and I can just be. So, yeah, you can just forget about everything just for a little while.
If you want to run a race, hey, here's a chariot. Whether it's run, walk, we'll find a way.
Anyone I see out and about around town, I'm like, you know about the angels yet?